Welcome all to the premiere of the Indirect Tax Insights on the EY India Insights podcast series. My name is Jayashree Parthasarathy, and I'm your host for the day. Today, we'll explore the taxation of corporate guarantees and try and demystify GST provisions on this particular topic with our expert guest. The guest we have today is T.R. Venkateshwaran, a partner with EY's Bangalore Indirect Tax Practice. TRV's joined us recently about 6 months ago in EY. We call him TRV. Venkateshwaran is a very, very long name, and I've had the privilege of being associated with TRV for the last 10 plus years. Yeah. So welcome, TRV, to our podcast today.
Thank you. Thank you, Joshua.
So TRV, you know, there's been a lot of buzz around GST levy on corporate guarantee. And my understanding of corporate guarantee is basically a guarantee or an undertaking that is typically provided by one related party, usually a parent or an affiliate, on behalf of their subsidiary to a bank or a financial institution to assume responsibility of repayment of any borrowings the subsidiary might have. Now, my understanding also is that these type of guarantees have been there around for a long time since pre-GST era. So I wanted to start by really asking you on what is this sudden buzz? Why are we hearing so much about corporate guarantee being taxed today when it was always there perhaps as a service offering if we wanted to consider it as one? So when, how, why, where did this start? You know, and more importantly, in your considered view as an expert, is issuance of corporate guarantee really a service that should be taxed under GST while it's remained untaxed till now? So over to you for your perspectives.
Thank you, Jayashree. It's always a pleasure to engage in a technical discussion, especially on an exciting topic like corporate guarantee. As you rightly said, this is not a topic which is existing recently. It has been in existence for long. To take a step back, even under the service tax law, this issue has been evenly debated. If I were to say, in service tax, there were two eras. One was a positive list and another was a negative list era, which started from July 2012. So going back to the positive list, there has been cases which said that there is no classification for a particular service of corporate guarantee and hence service tax should not apply. But if you were to look at what was the issues for anything to qualify as a service under the service tax era, there needs to be an existence of a service and for a consideration. So there were debates to say that this particular activity of extending a corporate guarantee did not fit into any of the common services which were defined under the service tax era, under the positive list regime. So the litigation was surrounding on that particular topic, whether it was fitting under a particular type of service or not. Once negative list came into the picture, the issue shifted to, yes, everybody agreed it, there is some element of service existing because it was not specifically excluded, neither exempted. But between related parties, there was no consideration. And because there was a lack of consideration, the condition of qualifying as a service was not getting fulfilled. So under the service tax era, the issue was there was no service because there was no consideration. And hence, no taxability. When GST came in, even between related parties, any service without consideration was also deemed to be a service.
Right.
And that created this issue of how to tax this particular transaction. Now, yes, that was a starting point. So because GST started from July 2017, the issue has been what should be the value at which this corporate guarantee is charged between related parties. Whether, first of all, it is a service or not was a question which remained. But over and above that, valuation started becoming an important point. And different authorities and different companies started taking different interpretations. And that was a need for the government to come up with a standardized approach to solve this issue.
Right. Very interesting to hear the history. So in summary, the act of providing a guarantee has always been a service, but it went untaxed till now because there was no consideration typically agreed between the parties. So now what we all know the government has done is it has also provided a valuation mechanism, as I hear, where 1% of the guaranteed amount is supposed to be offer to an 18% tax, right? So could you tell us a little bit about how this impacts some of our taxpayers and whether these valuation rules when they were introduced, were they aligned to the basic principles of GST taxation and what's happened since then?
Yeah. So as we discussed, the problem was how to tax it and what is the value at which it has to be taxed. The government solved that by putting in an amendment in October 2023 to say the value of a corporate guarantee for taxation purposes would be 1%. But in doing so, it was all across sectors, it was made applicable for all types of SSEs. The problem was, even for related party transactions where people were eligible to take full credit, there always existed a law that whatever was the invoice value would be deemed to be the open market value. But even in those cases, only for corporate guarantee, the specific valuation of 1% came into the picture. So basically, without distinguishing between people eligible for full credit and people not eligible for full credit. So that created a dichotomy. So then further, again, in the 53rd council meeting, the government clarified, saying that the 28(2) amendment was further amended to say that the 1% is only for applicants, recipients available in India. Further, this 1% valuation was made per annum basis, because the earlier question that remained was, when will this be liable to be paid, whether at the time the guarantee is given or every year, etc. So to clarify that, they said this 1% has to be paid on an annual basis. And more importantly, they created an exception to say that this 1% will not apply for people who are able to avail full credit of it. So whatever they charge in their invoice to be the value for the service, that would be deemed to be the valuation for corporate guarantee purposes. So to some extent, the clarity emerging that 1% is applicable only for SSEs who are not having the ability to take full credit, and the periodicity at which this 1% will be levied.
All right. Thanks for clarifying that. So it's good to know the government seems to have stepped in quite swiftly to clarify and at least give relief to the extent that we have businesses who are eligible for full input tax credit. There, what you're saying is that the 1% doesn't really apply. It can probably be even a nil value if there is really no charge for the corporate guarantee. So while we've spoken about how this levy has evolved in India, TRP, can you now probably throw some light, basis your experience, on how this type of a taxation in India compares to how the tax treatment on guarantees is across the rest of the world? Any nuggets on that?
Yeah. So as we discussed, the concept of corporate guarantee has been existing, and because it is between related parties, naturally, we need to rely on the transfer pricing laws, which is where the actual origin of this particular levy comes into picture. We all know that in transfer pricing, if it is an international transaction, there has to be an arm's length value at which the charge is being determined. Traditionally, the litigation in transfer pricing law has also been that this does not qualify as an international transaction at all, and hence it should be outside the purview of an arm's length benchmarking exercise. Subsequently, the transfer pricing laws were amended to specifically include guarantees as part of an international transaction, and hence the aspect of taxing them and at arm's length values originated. But traditionally, across the tribunals in India, and also the law has evolved over a period of time to assess the risk that the guarantor undertakes or the potential loss that the guarantor undertakes for the purpose of determining the arm's length value of the cross-judge. So the important element is, how does one value this risk depending on what risk the person assumes, which becomes an important basis for valuing this transaction. And even internationally, the disputes in the VAT laws has not been around whether what should be the value, but it is more centered around whether a corporate guarantee is liable to VAT or not liable to VAT. But assuming people have agreed that it is liable to VAT, they always accepted the value determined under the transfer pricing laws to be the value on which VAT will also be applied. Unfortunately, in India, in the GST regime, this 1% basis of valuation has come about, but the basis of determining this 1%, we are not sure how it was determined, because one has to appreciate the risk that the guarantor undertakes or the guaranteeing entity undertakes in order to derive at the valuation. And disconnected value, which is a deeming value, which is some sort of a one-size-fits-all approach, doesn't seem to gel well with the underlying principles that are already there in the transfer pricing setup.
I absolutely get that. And, you know, I've also seen that in many cases, the guarantee amount is as low as 0.2 to 0.6%. Very rarely is it 1%. But moving on from there, I think maybe a fundamental question I should have started with, but let's get to that right now. So, you know, we also see a lot of different types of guarantees or letters being provided between related parties or holding companies and subsidiaries. Some of them call it guarantees, some of them call it letter of comfort, assurance of liquidity, so on and so forth. So from your standpoint, are all of these to be treated as corporate guarantees, or is this 1% levy that we're all discussing today restricted to a certain type of corporate guarantee and not just any assurance that is given?
Yeah. So the law presently today, if you see, it defines, I mean, at least makes it applicable only on guarantees given to a financial institution or to a bank. So from that extent, if the guarantee is given for any other purpose, it's safe to assume that those kind of guarantees are not covered, and only guarantees any given to a loan taken from a financial institution or a bank is covered. But all of this goes back to the contract law as to what is a contract for guarantee. It is primarily a contract to assure somebody that the borrower will repay the loan, or the person giving the guarantee will step into the shoes of the borrower and make good the loss in case of a default by the borrower. And technically, only those which qualify as a contract of guarantee should be covered under this particular aspect of taxation, is my belief or my view. Aspects like letter of guarantee, etc., while the nomenclature may differ, we have to always circle back and see what are the underlying principles that are originating from it, and whether it is given to a particular bank or a financial institution, and then treat the taxability accordingly.
I understand.
But what is also interesting is also how the financial treatment is done in the books of accounts. Because I'm not an expert on financial accounting, but to my limited understanding, Indian accounting standards and IFRS recognize, or there's a need to recognize the value of the guarantee in the books of accounts. And that is how it originated. The issue under the GST law also originated from that, because when a corporate guarantee is given, because it is an off-balance sheet item and the risk has to be computed and captured in the balance sheet, it is always a good practice to compute it and report it in the financial statements. Now, how it is being given, the value of the guarantee is computed, the risk assumed is computed, and there is an investment that is created in the books and a liability that is created in the as an obligation. And on an year-on-year basis, this investment is brought down and a notional income is recognized in the profit and loss account. That notional income contributed the trigger for the department, the GST department, to say, okay, there is an income that is recognized in the books, but there is no GST that is paid. And that is how this whole issue started. So now the important point is we need to go back to the contract law and say whether something qualifies as a contract for guarantee, and then apply these principles of taxability to it. Anything that is falling outside it, in my view, should be kept outside the purview of tax.
Okay, great point there. And I guess a good starting point for all of us is also to try and see how the statutory auditor is giving an accounting treatment with respect to some of these arrangements. Are they going to be essentially treated as guarantee or not? So I had another question, which is, you know, you spoke about the fact that the government was swift to come and clarify a lot of aspects around the taxation of corporate guarantee in a timely manner. But even after these amendments and clarifications, do you believe there are still some open issues? And, you know, what would be your advice to our listeners in dealing with some of these open issues with respect to corporate guarantees?
Certainly, there are a few issues. For example, to start with, the rule, the amendment to the rule only talked of the value applying on a per annum basis. But the time of supply at the time when this particular 1% has to be paid was not coming out of the rules. But the circular went ahead and clarified that the time of supply will be when the guarantee is given, and it should be for the entire term of the guarantee right at the front. Now that raises another issues, like there are different types of corporate guarantees. For example, one can be a perpetual guarantee where there is no definite time period that is mentioned in the contract. How do you treat those transactions? okay, from a value perspective, I may determine that 1%, but what is the time of supply? When should I, for how many years should I compute this value? Suddenly that creates an issue. So one practical way of dealing with it is to probably say, okay, I will pay 1% every year. But whether that will be accepted by the department, we don't know. That particular aspect has to be tested. There are certain guarantees which can have no monetary limits. It can blanket say that whatever is the default, I will make good that loss. But there is no monetary value to it. Then how would I value that 1%? On what value that 1% will be applied? Would I mean to assume that that means the levy fails and hence the taxability fails in those transactions? Again, a topic for litigation. More importantly, the circular does not take into instances where certain loans and guarantee arrangements are pre-closed. I may start off with a loan at 10%, 10 years. But let's say I pre-close the loan after 2 years. Now the circular says I need to value that 1% for 10 years and pay the 10% at the beginning of the tenure itself. But after 2 years, once I pre-close the loan, will I have the ability to do a raise a credit note for the unexpired term, or can I get a refund for the amount that I already paid? Those aspects are not clear. Sometimes it may also happen that the purpose of the loan gets changed. For example, we all know that in the current scenario, if let's say I'm in a situation where I cannot take full credit, I pay the 1% upfront. And let's take an example of a construction or an infrastructure company. I take a term loan and it is for construction purposes. We all know that anything related to construction, any service, the credit eligibility is not there at this point in time. But 2 years down, once the construction is complete and the property is ready for lease or the property is earning me a revenue, I may go to the bank financier and refinance the original term loan into an operating loan.
Right.
And repay the original loan. So now the loan has converted into a construction related loan to an operational loan. Can I then say now that part of the GST that I paid on the entire amount is eligible for credit? That situation is not clear. So like that, there are unique use cases depending on the industry. And similarly, there are use cases like certain sectors are a creation of the statute. For example, there are infrastructure companies, there are real estate investment trusts, which are a creation of a statute per se, and the entity structure that is there in those structures are derived from the statute itself.
And also in these structures, rather than the holding company giving the guarantee, it's vice versa, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the point remains is that on one hand, the law governing those sectors require me to create SPVs.
Right.
And because SPVs are created and they don't have a significant balance sheet of their own, they will have to rely on their corporate or the main entity for raising the loans, which means it is a creation of the law per se. But on one hand, there is a deeming provision which requires me to pay GST on the corporate guarantee. These creates a lot of issues from a sector specific, and hence I think this circular has a lot of areas which still needs to be addressed.
And I'm guessing for some of these sectors where credit is also a challenge, the 1% becomes a huge cost effectively. Absolutely. Or the GST on that 1% becomes a cost. So we spoke a lot about, maybe inbound guarantees till now, where, a subsidiary in India needs to determine, or a company in India needs to determine whether there is a GST applicable on the provision of the guarantee. And then it takes a call to either pay basis 1% or take a position that nil value is acceptable because they're eligible for full input tax credit. But let me flip the scenario on the question to you. So if we are, let's say, looking at an outbound company where, let's say, the corporate office is in India and it has subsidiaries or affiliates outside India and headquartered in India, and should the head office in India or the parent in India provide a corporate guarantee to its affiliates, subsidiaries in other countries, do these valuation provisions cover that? Do they need to pay the 1%? Can they claim an export status? What is the scenario there?
So this particular provision specifically clarifies that the deeming provision does not apply for outbound transactions.
Okay.
It applies only for recipients of guarantees in India, which means for intercompany transactions within India and inbound guarantees, this provision would apply. But having said that, it is entirely viable possibly to take an export position, but we need to understand that there has to be a charge and a receipt of consideration for that. we all know that for something to qualify as an export, of course, something qualifies as a supply, but that supply should also be realized in cash as a consideration for that. So in a scenario where there is an outbound guarantee that is being given and a specific charge is raised by the Indian entity on the overseas entity, and provided that money is remitted back to India, an export position should be feasible. In the absence of a remittance coming into India, then the question of someone satisfying the export conditions itself doesn't arise. So to that extent, I think there won't be a charge at all because I'm not raising an invoice. So there is no requirement for me to adopt any deeming valuation provisions because it is specifically excluded.
So you're saying there's some merit to say that outbound guarantees should not be taxable ideally.
That's right.
And let's see how that progresses. So thank you so far. Great insights. Let me perhaps go to the last of my questions for today's podcast. So you mentioned that there are quite a few open issues, notwithstanding the clarifications that have come in. How and when do you see these issues getting resolved? And what should our listeners do to get to a resolution?
Yeah. So there are two ways in which ultimately this issue will probably get settled in due course. One obvious way is through the court of law, where we already know that there are quite a few writs petitions that are pending before the Delhi High Court, the Telangana High Court, as well as the Punjab and Haryana High Court, where this aspect of levy of GST on corporate guarantees has been tested. So much to the fact that the courts have held the operation of the circular has been stayed for the specific assessees, and with a direction that the assessing authority should assess these transactions without considering the clarifications in the circular. Having said that, even this new circular, as we talked about, there can be certain areas which can go beyond the operation of the rule that is existing today. On that aspect, the circular can also be tested. One of the aspects which we talked about was whether the circular is right in specifying the time of supply to be the time at the guarantee is given itself, that too for the entire tenure of the guarantee. So that is one aspect which can definitely be tested in the court of law. The other aspect is the validity of this 1% levy itself, whether it qualifies as a rational valuation itself can supposed to be questioned. If you remember in the Gujarat High Court, there was a similar question that came about in the construction sector as to whether the deeming deduction of 1/3 of the value of the land, deeming it to be the value of land, is it a viable or a rational deeming fiction? That aspect was questioned, and the Gujarat High Court had said it may not be the correct way of determining the deduction. Similarly, what is the basis for arriving at a 1% valuation is open to interpretation and can be questioned in the court of law. But having said that, I believe that advocacy is also a good route to probably engage with the stakeholders across the government and the state governments to highlight to them how this issue has different connotations across industries. And it is important for the industry players to raise these issues at the respective forums so that the government is also made aware of some of the nuances which are specific to particular sectors and represent to the government to probably create certain exceptions for those sectors. I think that can be the other way in which some of these issues can be resolved.
Thank you, TRB. Extremely insightful and valuable perspectives and a lot of takeaways for all of us listening in on today's podcast. And we look forward to more such nuggets from you going forward. Thank you all listeners. Do stay tuned for more captivating discussions and insightful sessions as a part of the EY India Insights podcast series. Please don't forget to subscribe for the latest updates. And until next time, this is your host, Jayashree Parthasarathy, signing off.